In this edition of the TWBC podcast, we check in with Stephen Ireland next.
The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Skiing. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Greetings one and all, and welcome to this edition of the TWBC podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot, and thank you for your continued support of this podcast. All right then, so with the Travis Grand Prix just a few hours away, we check in with a skier who's starting to make a name for himself in men's pro tournament slalom skiing. We introduce to this podcast Stevie Ireland. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Tony. Thanks for having me, man.
Not a problem. Not a problem at all. So fresh off off your wedding, as a matter of fact, getting ready for this event at Travers.
Yeah, I got married just on Sunday, and we're recording this on Thursday. Practice before the Grand Prix. I'm extremely excited to be here, but I haven't really been skiing much because of the wedding weekend that we had in Vegas. But, I can't wait for this event. This is my third Grand Prix, but it's my first time skiing it as a pro.
All right. Okay. Yeah. So you kind of like got promoted a little bit, I would say.
Yeah. After a lot of hard work, finally coming back as a pro is really, really cool. I think the last time I skied in this event, I ran close to my personal best. I think I ran like 2.5 at 38 off. And that was just 2 years ago. And I'm excited to come back and really, put the pedal down and try and take down a 39 tomorrow and, make it into the final.
Okay. We'll explore the path that you took to get from that personal best to 38 off to your current personal best right now, which is about a third the way down 41 off. Isn't that right?
Yeah, halfway down the 41 off line. 3 of 41 is my PB right now.
All right, then. So we'll explore that in a few minutes. But kind of introduce yourself to the folks out there, because people are wondering, who the heck is Stevie Ireland?
Yeah, I actually read that online the other day. Is it, who is Stevie Ireland? I think it was after I made the final at Hilltop.
Yeah.
I come from Dallas, Texas, so I'm a South Central skier, but I grew up skiing. So I started when I was about 4 years old, and my first competition
was a Cowboys fan, I take it.
I'm wearing a Cowboys hat right now, so it's quite obvious, isn't it?
Indeed.
And yeah, huge Cowboys fan, obviously. I grew up there. And my first competition as a slalom skier was when I was 6 years old at Bennett's. And so, I grew up with the sport. My father was in the Navy, and he was into windsurfing. And when he got landlocked due to a job moving him to Dallas, Texas, he wanted to find something that, could give him that thrill again. And so he stumbled upon slalom skiing. And he got really into it. He's a three-eventer himself, Dave Ireland. You've probably seen him on. You commented on his nationals performance just recently.
Yeah.
In Illinois, or not Illinois? Sorry, in Kansas. And I was watching that webcast. He did a good job there.
Why, thank you. Thank you very much indeed. So I do know Dave Ireland. I mean, him and me go way, way back, with the South Central Regional Championships and Nationals and various other record capability tournaments. I didn't really delve too much into his past. And, when I look at him and then reconcile the fact that you told me he comes from the Navy, then it kind of made sense, yeah. given the closely cropped haircut and all that kind of stuff,
He does fit the bill, you know what I mean? He's a burly guy, he's a stocky guy. He's a macho man in a way.
Yeah, and he's a man's man.
He really is. And he's so American, you know what I mean? All my friends growing up, a lot of my friends growing up were first-generation American, and they would tell me, they'd be like, Stevie, your dad is just so through-and-through pure-blood American, man.
Kind of like American dad, I guess.
Kind of like that, yeah. So he's the one who introduced me into the sport of slalom skiing at a very young age. And in the South Central region, it's a bit difficult to be competitive on a global stage. My big goal every year was to do well at nationals. I podiumed a few times. I actually won it once as a boys two, back when boys two was when you're about, 10 to 14 years old. So that was a huge accomplishment for me. And that was the last time, I had, gone to that level of competition prior to my collegiate career at Berklee College of Music. So I moved to Boston and I took a big step back from the sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I didn't realize you actually had to move north to pursue your college career. Berklee College of Music, right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so your degree within the scope of that university dealt more with the business end of music or rather than actually performing, right?
It's quite a bit of both. So you have to have a principal instrument and you have to be proficient on that instrument throughout your collegiate years with Berklee, and you get tested on your proficiency with your instrument each and every semester.
What instrument?
Guitar.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, and I produced music as well, and it's a liberal arts degree, so you have to take the liberal arts requirements, so I took a lot of very interesting courses. It was a through and through 4-year education instead uh-huh. of, just an associate's degree or anything like that. Like, it was a full-on collegiate education on top of having to be proficient at your instrument and do your ensembles and all of those requirements.
Kind of a bit like Juilliard, I guess, in that respect. But, Juilliard is more intense towards the performing, right?
It's much more classical focused. Mm-hmm. They have a jazz program, but it's much smaller. Berklee is much more jazz and contemporary focused, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get that. So after college, you didn't move immediately back to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. You set your sights on South Florida. And what was the motivation for that? Was there a career waiting for you down there, or were you looking to try and get back into the sport and found that area was more to your liking?
Yeah, well, I grew up slalom skiing, as I had mentioned previously, and each and every year my dad wanted to get me coaching because, he didn't have a lot of years in the sport, and he thought that, maybe if we went to Florida, we can get him to become, more highly skilled in skiing, and we can see him, kind of take off as a young athlete. And so he would, I had the privilege of him taking me to Florida and West Palm Beach or Boca Raton each and every year to go ski with Chet Raley. So me and Chet started skiing together when I was 8 years old on an annual basis. And we would go there for a couple weeks and I would just soak in as much information as I could get from Chet, who's an amazing mentor and coach down in Boca Raton. And then I would take that information back and just work on it myself for the next year.
Okay. Are you someone that responds well to video coaching as well? Certainly plenty of opportunities existed for having someone in the boat to video you so you can analyze it against what you've did.
Yeah, of course. But video coaching, first off, Chet's not much of a proponent of video coaching for whatever reason. He has his own reasons. But back then, it wasn't very popular to do because the video recording and sending it was such bad quality. Mm-hmm. We're talking when I was 8 years old, that was 2003. So I'll be aging myself a little bit compared to the competition we'll see tomorrow. But it was more of an in-person thing for us and our relationship. So when I thought about moving down to Florida, it wasn't necessarily because I wanted to get back into skiing. I knew that was part of it. But I also wanted to, get out of Nashville. I was in Nashville at the time and just focus on a more healthy lifestyle and less of the nightlife thing, less of the musician thing, and kind of get more into a centered lifestyle. And so that was part of it as well. But of course, the skiing was a big motivating factor because I didn't miss the sport a ton because I had taken about 5 years off at that point.
Uh-huh. Okay, so back into the sport, back into the swing of things. You've grown accustomed to an existence in South Florida. So kind of help fill in the gap between that and where we are right now.
Well, I got back into the swing of things, and it was a rough start. It was a rough go of it. I was skiing 36 miles an hour, but I wanted to go to a tournament, and basically if I ran 35 on a consistent basis, that was really good for me when I got first back into the sport. And this was probably 4 years ago when I moved to South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of a slow climb. It was frustrating because I didn't have as good of a foundation as I thought I did. And so getting back into it, I didn't have the knowledge of the ski tuning that I needed. I didn't have the knowledge of alignment and swing and all of these fundamental things. I was completely lacking. And so eventually, I started skiing with Wim Decree at Hobe, and he got me to the point where I was starting to take down 38 off.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big deal for me because I'd never run 38 off ever in any speed. And so when I did that, I was like, okay, I'm making progress. I was seeing some progress in my skiing. I was like, okay, I can really focus in and start learning from the best, and I think I can actually do this. And I started to, the idea of being a pro water skier started to creep into my mind, even though it was so far-fetched even in that moment when I started to run those 38 offs just in practice.
Okay, so where were you professionally at that time? You know, because I mean, you graduated from Berkeley, and I mean, you obviously got your degree, and you've obviously applied it because you work as a music copywriter. Kind of give us a little bit about a little bit of an elevator pitch in regards to that.
Sure. Yeah, I work for ASCAP, which is what's called a performing rights organization in the music industry. So how we operate is we license our members' music. Our members are copyright holders of music.
Mm-hmm.
We have over 14 million songs in our repertory that we represent.
So we're talking like Warner Brothers Music, Warner Brothers Nashville, that the record labels we're talking about?
We have a large swath of large label music, of course, mm-hmm. Popular music, but we also have independent artists. I mean, anyone can sign up if you are a copyright holder of music, which I'm a copyright holder of music, and I'm not, you know, signed with any label. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So we have over 750,000 members, and I can promise you not all of them are, you know, Taylor Swift level. You know what I mean? So essentially what we do is we license their music out to businesses that need to use music, and then we take those funds from the licensing fees and we distribute them back to the copyright holders of the music in form of royalties.
Excellent.
There's my elevator pitch. Right?
There's your elevator pitch. You know, that's the business side of music, and so now you've established yourself a little bit in central in South Florida, whole world away from Central Florida. That's what people tell me, and now you've established yourself professionally. Now, you know, anyone that you speak to at this level in tournament water ski slalom, you know, I mean, they can't do it alone. I mean, absolutely. And I mean, and you know, the training partner comes into play, you know, so kind of give us a little bit of an idea of your search for someone, who becomes your training partner, you know, and helps elevate your performance going forward.
Yeah. I mean, of course, Chet Raley is a huge mentor and partner of mine. But then, you know, 2 years ago, when at this same tournament, I met Elizabeth Montavon, who I'm now just got married to.
Okay.
So it's been a quick 2 years, but essentially, I went out one morning to Boca Raton to, you know, hang out with Chet, see Elizabeth, of course, because we had started dating at that time. This is shortly after we had met. And she's like, why don't you just come ski with us? And I was like, okay. So I just got in the boat thinking it was just going to be a normal set. And let me tell you, it was not a normal set. It blew my mind. The energy level of which they had together as, you know, a mentor-mentee type of partnership. And the level of skiing and training that I saw was at such a professional level. And it was kind of intense, too. It was almost palpable. And in that moment, all I wanted to do was be a part of it.
So it was kind of like a meet cute on steroids type deal.
It was incredible. I can't even describe to you. She was just running back to back 38s, just down up and down the lake, up and down. And Chet was like, that's not good enough. He was being really intense, really hard on her, but like they had this level of respect between each other. And you know, me and Chet go way back, so I kind of understood what was happening. But at the same time, I had been so far removed from the sport, it almost like
did she know at that time how far back you two went, or did she have that kind of advanced knowledge, or did you just not communicate that to her at the time?
On that day, I don't think she did. She may have had an idea, but I don't think she knew specifically that I had met Chet and started training with him at 8 years old. I don't think she had.
So you were in on the gag?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. I think when she found out for real, she was like, no way. It was almost like it was meant to be, you know, with the three of us. And so I started skiing with Chet way more after that day, because like, I had to be a part of what was occurring down in Boca Raton with Chet Raley at the Palm Beach Training Center. And I got more involved with Chet and Noah, and it took my skiing to a whole nother level. I started doing things I didn't even know I could possibly do.
And Noah is Noah Veek, right?
Correct. Noah Veek, yeah. Chet's kind of partner in crime down there.
Absolutely. So, I mean, obviously with Noah, not too far behind is Vanessa.
Yes.
You know, so, I mean, how did that dynamic kind of, you know, work with Elizabeth being in close proximity? I mean, were they eyeing up each other so far as their practices were concerned? Were they actively trying to, you know, beat each other out in the water, that kind of stuff, or was it fairly lighthearted at the time?
Oh no, I mean, there's always this level of competition that we have with each other as competitors out on the water, and there's always some sort of sizing up, quote unquote, but Vanessa skis in the afternoon, Elizabeth and I kind of ski in the morning. We would cross paths sometimes, and there was always a level of respect. There was never any, you know, anything weird going on. But no, we love Vanessa, we love Noah, and everyone's at Palm Beach Training Center is extremely supportive of each other, and nothing would be able to get in between that, you know, level of respect that all the athletes have there.
Okay, so at that time, your personal best was the something at 38.
Three or three and a half.
Three. Now your personal best is two passes further down.
Yes.
So let's see if we can get from that point to the point today where you're consistently getting through 39 and a half off and getting some people to sit up and take notice. So okay, let's take it from there to there.
Well, okay, so, you know, I was trying to run 38 in a tournament so I can qualify for Open Men because I cared so much about Elizabeth and being around her. I was like, man, if I could just qualify for the Open Men status, and then I can go all the tournaments with Elizabeth, and then we can hang out together there, too, because I had, you know, a crush on this girl.
Meet carrot, meet stick.
Exactly. And so I was like, well, I'll never be competitive with those guys, but maybe I can just go to the events and have fun and hang out. And so I was really focused on just getting my Open Men status. And this was like 2 years ago. And since then, I've actually picked up like six buoys every single year. I just kind of continue to climb. And hopefully, you know, next year will be...
Now it gets a little harder to put an additional six buoys on top of what you've already done.
Well, yeah, a little bit harder. But, you know, maybe we'll see. But basically from there to there... From A to B, I never even knew what was possible. And, you know, a testament to Bill Montavon, who drives me every dang day out at Okahele, Elizabeth, who supported me, and she's the one who made me write down my goals at the beginning, you know, when we first met, like, write down your ski goals and you'll match them, I promise. And to Chet Rayleigh, who's coached me every single day too. You know, those are the three people in my life and my family, and my parents, of course, who have really, you know, they're the ones who have gotten me to this, you know, 3 of 41 status. Like, I made the final at Hilltop.
Yeah, like, you did.
The gratification of having those milestones in my ski career has been so great because I know that they're the ones who have gotten me there, that my support team, you know what I mean? It's been really, really fulfilling this year, seeing some results.
So you cleared 39 and a half off for the first time this year, wasn't that right?
That is correct, yeah.
So what was that reaction like?
A big fist bump, man, and you sit down at the end of the lake, and then you realize you got to come back at the 41, 10.25. You know, you kind of have to shake it off really quick. But no, I mean, that was huge too. It's crazy because in tournament it's much more difficult. There's all these different factors, and your heart rate's a little higher, and you know, it's tough to take those passes down in tournament. I mean, people see the pros do it here all the time. You know, just smacking 39s left and right off the dock in runoffs.
Okay,
don't realize
let's,
how
let's
hard
back
it is.
Let's back up a little bit. Okay, you're coming around buoy number four, and you're approaching number five, and you're still on top of the ski. What was going on into buoy number five, and try to control the expletive here?
Well, if you back up the Swiss, I had it there. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
I five ball choked and kind of safety checked it a little too hard, and then ended up with 5.5. And so when I was at Okahele in that record tournament, I was like, no matter what, I'm attacking this five ball because I'm not getting 5.5 again. Absolutely not. So it was kind of this revert back to your training, know that you're able to do it, and just come out of five strong so you're not choking it like I did at Swiss.
All right, then. And you've cleared 39 and a half off first time this season and a number of other times this season, not only in just your run-of-the-mill record tournaments, but also in places, you know, like Hilltop. Now, obviously a world of difference between Okeheli Park and this place here over in Groveland for the Travis Grand Prix and Hilltop, you know, because you don't get to ski in water that's that much cooler in relative terms, do you?
No, it's definitely very different, I'll tell you. It was my second time at Hilltop when I ran that 3 at 41 there. And I had no practice either because we landed on Friday and they said no practice in between events or after the event had commenced. So I was going into the first round completely cold. And
so where did your mind go to at that event when they said, okay, no practice? Okay. So did you think to a point where you've been before, like, you know, I haven't practiced before in so-and-so tournaments, and yet I've skied fairly decently. What are my keys here?
You know, it's tough, Tony. I mean, you can't freak out. You can't worry. You just have to go in confident, knowing that you've been skiing well, and you have to be confident in the training that you've, you know, prepared and done prior to the event. Regardless of the lack of familiarization, you just kind of have to trust in yourself in those moments.
All right, then. So halfway down, 41 off, you're a finalist at Hilltop, you know, probably over moon at that point. So I mean, what was going through your mind as your head hit the pillow on that occasion?
Well, of course, I was super ecstatic. I mean, it was my first pro final, and, you know, it was the second time I've gotten that 3 at 41. And
I bet there wasn't much sleep involved.
No, it was fine. I mean, I'm a good sleeper, Tony, I'll tell you. I'm very excellent at sleep. So I slept like a baby for 8 hours, like I always do. But it is a little more nerve-wracking because there's more eyeballs on you. You know, a lot of people will just watch the finals on Sunday. And
especially the folks that also look at the bowl of spray and, like, say, who the heck is Stevie Island?
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, you definitely have more attention, and it is a little bit more heavy nerves. And you do have, like, the announcers kind of more involved in what you're doing when you're in the final.
I wonder who that could be.
Yeah, someone like you, you know,
maybe.
Talking about my mistakes. But no, I mean, it was an amazing experience. And I really, you know, I want to accomplish that again. I want to make the final at every event that I get to now.
And does that incentivize Elizabeth to do likewise as well? Because now you're setting now she set the bar pretty high. Now you've kind of superseded her a little bit with the bar that you've set. Now she's got to come back and say, all right, then. Okay. Okay, you drop your cards down, we'll see you and raise you.
Well, Elizabeth doesn't need my help with motivation, I can promise you that. She is a highly motivated, ambitious woman, and she's killed it last year. She won Miami Pro in runoff with Regina Jaquist, the greatest slalom skier of all time. I mean, she did a phenomenal job last year, and she definitely doesn't need my help. And I've been chasing her ever since that day in the boat with Chet Raley. She's been an amazing motivator for me personally, and a role model, honestly. And it's pretty cool when your wife is your role model.
Indeed. And obviously you've motivated her during the course of the season. She hasn't skied all that much this season. I think a lot of that was down to injury. I think she pulled some muscles in her arm and something like that, right?
She had a really bad crash in May, like the second week of May, and right after Swiss. And she's been struggling with that injury. She's been struggling with skis and trying to get the right setup, and just had some, you know, just that injury really set her back. And so she's just kind of taking her time with her recovery process, you know, doing her and you know, making sure that when she comes back to competition, that she's coming back strong and ready to go.
How does that press upon your skiing as well? You know, I mean, because it's, I mean, one crash and your training partner is out of action on the water for a considerable amount of time. So it's basically you and you alone that's doing the on-water activity, you know. So, you know, how does that situation play out?
Well, it's really amazing because despite the fact that Elizabeth had some time off the water this year, my support team was still there for me. You know, Bill would still drive me even if Elizabeth wasn't training that day. Chet was still coaching me regardless of Elizabeth's absence at times. So, you know, I didn't really feel alone. I mean, Elizabeth still supported me, and she's still supporting me now, even though she's not here at this event. We just got married. You know, a lot of wives would be pretty upset. Like, hey, why are you running up to Orlando, like, right after we got married? You know, she's been extremely supportive regardless of the fact that, you know, she's still kind of bouncing back from that.
All right, then. So this event this weekend, you know, it's a really interesting juxtaposition, because the last time that you skied in this event, you were one of the amateurs. This time around, 2 years later, you're one of the pros. I mean, what up with that?
It's kind of a cool feeling, Tony. I mean, I'm really excited. I had so much fun at the last two events here as an amateur. It's so cool how, you know, Jack and John put on this sick event where you can ski with the pros. It's a community effort, and then you go into this skeet shooting and go-karting situation. Like, it's just such a cool concept, and the fact that they pull it off each and every time they do it is just, it's fantastic. So thank you to Jack and Leilani and John and Chris for having me.
All right, then. So the next few months, obviously you've got the Miami Pro. Of course, you're going to be skiing in that. Mm-hmm. I would imagine, yeah. And then you've got the off season where you're training for a whole bunch of tournaments, starting with Swiss. But it is a Worlds year, so you want to try and you're looking to try and bump up your performances to put you high enough on the rankings list in order for you to qualify to ski in those Worlds as an individual, right?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, that's a huge goal of mine, is to qualify for Worlds. That'd be really, really cool. And of course, there's Moomba too. So there's all these different tournaments that I'm thinking about going to and need to qualify for. So you're always trying to train for the next event. You're always trying to train for the next buoy so that you can, you know, be higher up in the world rankings and just leverage yourself to be in the best position to go to these events.
Not bad for a humble little competitor hailing out of the Metroplex, huh?
Hey, I mean, I always got to represent the South Central region. You know, there's not a lot of us who are on the circuit, so I'm always shouting out South Central. Greeny's here driving the men, and he's a South Central bra. He's from Arkansas.
Well, and I lay a little claim to being a South Central skier. I mean, come on.
Of course. I can't forget about you, Tony. I'm sorry, man.
No worries. No worries at all. Okay, well, we'll put a bow on this podcast. Just remind you a little bit about the Ski or Die podcast and Ski or Die.
Ski or Die podcast, you know, we've had a little bit of a hiatus this year, but that'll be coming back strong in the winter. And you can go to skiordie.shop to shop our merchandise and our foundation guide, which is for fitness programming.
All right, then. So, like I said, we'll put a bow on this podcast. Thank you very much for participating. Any acknowledgements, any thanks, shout-outs, that kind of stuff, I'll hand the mic over to you for that purpose.
Yeah, I mean, like I said again, John, you know, Jack, Leilani, Chris, thank you so much for having me at the Travers Grand Prix again. And thank you to my family and Elizabeth and Bill, Dave, Tracy, Kristen, love you guys, and, of course, Chet Rayleigh. And thank you, Tony, for having me.
Why, thank you very much, and that was Stephen Ireland, and this is Tony Lightfoot with the latest edition of the TWBC podcast. Until next time, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.